Another racehorse has died at the Santa Anita track in Southern California. That's 21 dead horses at the famed venue since the racing season began in late December. The track is now closed while investigators try to figure out what's going on. Joe Drape of the New York Times has been investigating stories like this for many years. He joins me now. Joe, it's good to speak with you.
Peter, thanks for having me.
Let's start by making clear for most people what you already know, that racehorses die at a remarkable rate in competition in this country.
Yeah, Peter. 2012, we did a series here at the Times, and we looked at all kinds of things. And what we found is about an average of 24 horses a week die at American racetracks. And it was a number that could have been lowered a great deal and has been subsequently, because a lot of it was just lack of regulation or over-medication, too much anti-inflammatories that sort of numbed the horses and allowed them to get injured like that. You know, I guess the important part now with the closings at Santa Anita, I mean, 10 years ago when I started looking into this stuff, a horse would die at a racetrack and you'd go to the vet or the track official and they say, well, that's just horse racing. But you know what we've seen over the years with the greater awareness of animal rights and a greater empathy for animals in sport, you know, that answer doesn't cut it anymore. So you know, overall they've cut the rate of fatalities on racetracks by about 60%. But at the same time, when you have this sort of spike in fatalities, 21 in basically a month, it was December 26, and that was as many as all of last year. So they had to do something, and they went to work on it.
And clearly, the situation isn't completely better. And so let's try to get at what's happening at Santa Anita. We spoke with Mick Peterson earlier this week. He's director of the Ag Equine Programs at the University of Kentucky, and he had been out there in California looking at the track conditions, and he said that he found no problems. Let's listen.
We were looking at every option. One thing is when there's a lot of rain, you look and you expect the fine material to move to the inside rail of the track. And after we'd analyzed the samples under the assumption that there might have been an issue, we found that actually it was very consistent.
So officials had been saying, you know, perhaps this is something to do with the rain. Mick Peterson says perhaps not. But how important are track conditions for these horses?
You know, it's very important, and Rick Arthur, the vet out there, told me that this is sort of a perfect storm of circumstances. They've had 12 inches of rain, which is unlikely and unseasonable out there. It's been the coldest February in 25 months. When that happens, and I'm sure Mick told you, they have to do what they call sealing the racetrack, and that's making it very hard so water doesn't penetrate. So you've got 1,100-pound horses going 35 miles an hour on ankles the size of Coke bottles, pounding on this this hard surface. That's one factor. The second factor is there's a horse shortage. You know, when I started doing this in 98, 35,000 foals were born a year and were, you know, assumed to evolve into racehorses. Now that's about 22,000. And at the same time, racing has expanded. I mean, there's racing somewhere, and usually in multiple places, 365 days a year. So you got too few horses running too many days. That's tough on their wear and tear. The third thing, you know, I've said they've done some good, significant reforms on this, but you still have trainers out there and owners out there who want to get their investment out of the stall and onto the racetrack. And the racetracks have faulted this too. You know, they want them out of the stall into the races so they could have more money bet on them. And, you know, what they call stacking, they put several anti-inflammatories in them to get another race out of them. And what's really been interesting in this spike of 21 is 9 of them at least were happening in the morning hours training. And that is a time when it's less regulated. In the afternoon, they have vets, state vets, check all the horses out, their limits on what medications they can take. And, you know, as Rick Arthur again said to me, he said, you know, in the morning, we let the trainers train and the private vets vet. So, you know, it's multifaceted.
Well, let's talk about those painkillers that you're mentioning. I know in your investigation in 2012, that was a big part of it, that these trainers had been overworking their horses. The horses had aches and pains, maybe stress fractures somewhere hiding in the bones of their body, and they would pump them full of drugs to mask the problem. Is that legal?
That is not legal, and it never has been legal. The difference was then to now is it never had any teeth. It never had really any punishment. They've done a little better about that. They've never really tested hard. And, you know, you can't legislate morality, as the old saw goes. And you do – I'm not saying everybody does it, but you do have a population of trainers out there that are trying to make a living and are trying to push the envelope, and they take edges. And, you know, tragedies like these happen. Now, the thing that I guess if there's anything good that's come out of this – they know, the racetrack executives, the state vets, the regulators, they're one high-profile breakdown from being out of business. And I use the analogy to greyhounds. You know, greyhounds, there are thousands of tracks. Now they're down to 17, 11 of them in Florida, which will sunset in 2020.
Because they've been legislated out of existence.
Exactly. And, you know, they cannot afford, and especially this time of year, we're in the Triple Crown. You know, there's probably 3 million hardcore enthusiasts for horse racing to follow it year-round. But, you know, those 5 weeks beginning with the first Saturday in May, that is when 30 million people tune in because it's part of our history. You know, the hats, the fashion. And, you know, if something happens on this, like it did in 2008 when the Philly 8 Bills had to be put down after breaking her ankles finishing second, I don't think it'll survive.
We have some tape from 2008 when 8 Bills died. I want to play this from Dr. Larry Bramlage, who was an on-call veterinarian at the time, and he was interviewed on NBC right after that race.
Unfortunately, she broke both front ankles and collapsed, lost support to both of them, and so they immediately euthanized her because there was no possible way to save her, and that's an injury that's painful, so they just euthanized her immediately.
Joe, you can hear people cheering there in the background. A lot of people were celebrating the Derby. They didn't realize what had just happened, but it was this terrible moment on that day, which repeats itself, as you point out, many times every week in this country. Walk us through what usually happens after one of these animals goes down on the course, and as that vet just said, immediately euthanized right there for everyone to see.
Right. And, you know, it's hard for people to wrap their minds around. These are very fragile animals, and if they sustain injuries, especially around the legs, they can't support themselves, and everything, their organs, everything starts collapsing inwards. So, and it's very painful. So what usually happens, and what happened in the, you know, the old days, there's a great piece written in the early 1920s, and literally they'd pull the horse off the track and the guy would go down and shoot him in the head with a gun. Okay. Now what would happen is the ambulance would come out, they'd put a white screen up like you'd see in a hospital, they'd euthanize the horse would die, they would put it on the ambulance and then take it off. And, you know, I hate to even say it, I mean, when we did the series, at some tracks they were just kind of thrown over into a pit or something like that. It just sounds as awful as it really is. And that's what they're up against.
Isn't someone somewhere failing these horses?
Well, you'd have to say yes. Theoretically, the trainer knows that horse better than any other human being on earth and knows when he's hurt or not feeling well. And I've watched it. I've watched Bob Baffert, you know, the guy who's at the top of the game now. He can watch a horse walk 10 feet on a concrete in front of his barn and say he's off on his left side. They could tell by the way they eat. They've run all kinds of tests, so they know. But, you know, somebody has to do what's best for the horse, and it usually is the trainer who theoretically knows the horse best of all, who knows when he's feeling well and he's not feeling well. And they're the ones that have to decide, is this horse's health worth risking in a race?
That's Joe Drape, sports reporter for The New York Times. We're going to link you to his 2012 investigation about all these issues. Joe, thanks very much for your reporting and for speaking with us.
Peter, thanks for having me.